Our reading for Wednesday, July 22nd, is from 2 Corinthians chapter 9. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 1. Now it is superfluous for me to write to you about the ministry for the saints, for I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. But I am sending the brothers so that our boasting about you may not prove empty in this matter, so that you may be ready, as I said you would be. Otherwise, if some Macedonians come with me and find that you are not ready, we would be humiliated, to say nothing of you, for being so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go on ahead to you and arrange in advance the gift you have promised, so that it may be ready as a willing gift, not as an extraction. The point is this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. As it is written, he has distributed freely, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. For the ministry of this service is not only supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. By their approval of this service, they will glorify God because of your submission flowing from your confession of the gospel of Christ and the generosity of your contribution for them and for all others, while they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God upon you. Thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift. So we left off chapter 8 talking about the arrangements for the benevolent work that was going on and how the Macedonians had contributed. And then we get into chapter 9 and he begins to build upon that and talk about not only the giving portion and how that should be done, but the fact that if you make a promise, you need to fulfill that. And he was so confident in sharing that that promise had been made that if he showed up with those Macedonian brethren who've already provided their gift, having told them that that the Corinthians were willing and able to contribute as well, if that gift is not ready, then that humiliates them. It humiliates Paul because he's had his confidence in them. It humiliates the Corinthians because they've not followed through on their promise, which, by the way, if they made the promise and didn't fulfill it, unless there was some extraordinary circumstance that prevented them that was beyond their control, I think there would probably be some sinful motivations at work. So in chapter 8, he had made mention of a design, if you will, to how this was going to be carried out in order to avoid any appearance at all of any dishonesty in handling that benevolent gift. And so he provides this exhortation for them to follow through and for them to participate likewise with others. Again, verse 2, he makes this mention of their promise from a previous year. So there's been some time that has passed. So he's giving them a reminder and he's making sure that they follow through on that promise, as I just mentioned. Verse 3, I'm sending the brothers so that our boasting about you may not prove empty or prove vain, so that you may be ready as I said you would be. Otherwise, if they find that you're not ready, there's that humiliation that we just talked about. So verse 5, he says, I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go on ahead to you and arrange in advance for the gift you have promised, so that it may be ready as a willing gift, not as an extraction. That humiliating circumstance for everybody involved, he's saying, I'm trying to avoid that. And I don't want you to give out of humiliation and shame at the last moment. I want you to be ready and it to be shown as a willing gift, that which they had already promised. Verse 6, Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So his point of verse 6 is to expound upon the latter part of verse 5, where he says that it needs to be a willing gift, not as an exaction. Or you might be reading from a version that says out of covetousness. So what he's saying is, we shouldn't have to force you in this. We shouldn't have to show up, remind you that you promised, and then force you to put together the collection and be ready to send it on its way. So verse 6, he's expounding upon that. Whoever sows sparingly, reaps sparingly. Sows bountifully, reaps bountifully. That's similar to the language of Jesus in Mark chapter 10, verse 30, and the surrounding text, where Jesus talks about the fact that there's some things that we do give up in this life, but we gain even more eternally, we gain more spiritually. So he says in this particular verse that there are going to be great rewards, not necessarily in money, but there's going to be other things that are reaped out of this. And if you're stingy and you're holding back, then you're going to not reap those same rewards that you would if you were generous. Now, remember when we read in chapter 8, he pointed out that it's not a matter of giving something you don't have. It's a matter of what you do have. That was verse 12. According to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. So he's not telling them, sow bountifully, even if you don't have it. But he's saying, do what you can do and be generous with it. So what are they going to gain? Well, he keeps on going and he points this out. Let's see. Verse 11 and 12. You'll be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. For the ministry of this service is not only supplying the needs of the saints, but is overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. So God has provided the resource in the first place. We are merely stewards of those things. Second, you're providing for the needs of the saints, and that's a good work to feel good about and know that it's righteous in the sight of God. And then third, there's going to be many thanksgivings that are given to God by this. And verse 13, glorify God because of the submission flowing from your confession of the gospel of Christ and the generosity of your contribution. So there were many spiritual benefits that if they are cheerful and giving about these things, that they will reap these things bountifully. I think it's important to remember that when we're giving, we're not doing it to get a pat on the back. If anything, we're giving it so that God may be glorified, and we are giving it that we may all be thankful to God in those matters. And that's what he says in verse 8, is that we may abound in every good work. Well, that is by the ability that God has given to us. So God supplies the seed to the sower, bread for food, and he will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. So one thing sown, that gift for them, what they reap is threefold. The needs of the saints are met, the thanksgivings to God are increased, and God is glorified. So let's talk about the cheerful giver for just a moment. Going back up to verse 7, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Under the Old Testament, they were tithing. So 10% of everything, the first fruits, went to God. That supported the Levites, that supported the temple, and it required them every single time that they reaped what they were working on, you know, whatever their vocation was, farming, ranching, marketplace, whatever it might be, the first always went to God. 10% right off the top went to God. And it was a reminder that God was first in their lives, should have been first in their lives, and that the work was important. Some of that attitude, I think, translates into our New Testament responsibility to give to the local church so that his work might be accomplished. Those things which God has authorized the church to do, then there are funds that are used to further those things that God has assigned. But when we think about sowing bountifully, deciding in our heart, not being reluctant or under compulsion, we need to realize that it is a conscious effort. Giving to God is not, well, you know, I got paid this week, and we went out to eat, and we did this and this and this, and I've got a couple of bucks left in my wallet, so I'll give a little bit to that of that in the plate as it comes by. I haven't decided anything ahead of time. It's just whatever I got left. That's against what Paul is teaching here. He's saying you have to decide in your heart. And to me, that means you decide ahead of time. That is why when I talk about giving, I talk about the need to budget. We all have a household budget. Maybe some of us are better at budgeting than others. Some of us might be more detailed than others. I try to be very detailed so that I can control what we spend our money on. But we decide how much we're giving to God, and that goes in as a budget item. It's not negotiable. That's a done deal. So we have to decide in our heart ahead of time. During that decision-making process about, well, where do we set the air conditioner? Because that means that controls what my electricity bill is going to be. Do we go out to eat on Friday night? Or do we stay home and eat what we have on Friday night? Well, that's based on our discretionary funds. Is it in the budget or is it not? If there's anything I've learned over the years is that if you don't budget, then your spending kind of gets out of control. And what I've also learned is that if you don't budget your giving to God, then you don't give to God. That's just the way it works out. So Paul is saying, decide ahead of time, decide in your heart. Don't do it reluctantly or under compulsion, but do it cheerfully. That means that we realize that God has blessed me with these things. He has blessed me with talents that enable me to go out and get a job and do the work that is in this world. And I need to give him the credit for that. I need to give him credit for the ability to go out and make a living. I realize that we think, well, I went out and I worked my 40 or 50 or 60 hours this week and I was given a paycheck and I earned that paycheck. Well, yes, by the sweat of your brow, you did earn that paycheck, but it still ultimately comes from God. Your abilities are what he has given to you. We need to be thankful about those abilities and thankful that we have the job or have the income. And that means that when I give to him, it is out of thankfulness. It is out of a realization of how important the work is that I'm contributing to. The work of the church is very important. It is the pillar and support of the truth in the community. It is the support of evangelism. It is support of benevolence for the saints in our locality. And if we don't place a value on the work of the church, then we're not going to be very willing to contribute to that. So all of those things are connected. And I didn't mean to make that quite as involved as I did, but it's important that we realize the implication of being a cheerful giver. We need to truly be cheerful and purposeful givers. So all of this goes back to that surpassing grace of God that he's speaking of, our faith in Jesus Christ, and how we value these spiritual things and these spiritual rewards that we would have simply for sharing of our physical means. And so he ends with verse 15, thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift. Thank you for listening. Please continue in prayer that God may be with us all.